Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Peach State Pandemonium, a production brought to you by GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com, where we take you down memory lane for a look at professional wrestling the way it used to be, with conversations from those who paved the way. And now the GWH Radio Network presents Peach State Pandemonium.
Thursday, June 7th, 2012. I'm Peach State Pandemonium. This is Michael Morris, and as always, I am joined by my fantastic co-host, Gary Oates, and the new star of Ringside Rap, Mr. Bobby Simmons. Good evening, guys.
Good evening.
Just being with us wasn't enough. Is that it?
He's double dipping. I think. I hope you're going to give Jerry and I a percentage of that check.
He better. He better.
I think that they pay better.
I hope they do.
Oh.
They gave him a push last night, man. We don't give him enough of a push. So.
Was that what
yeah.
He yeah, well.
He's working out long, that's Jerry.
I knew it was going to happen sooner or later.
Well, you know. Hey.
Oh, man. Well, let me tell you guys, as you guys, I don't know if you can tell or not, I've told both of you what we were on the air, I am fighting a little bit of cold, and I'll tell you the reason why. You know what the high that day up here in Massachusetts was?
Rub it in, go ahead.
68 degrees.
Jeez.
You know what it was? You know what the high today, yesterday was?
54.
58 degrees. The day before that, the high was 52. I've been waiting for it to snow up.
So how much longer are you enslaved there? Two more weeks?
Two more weeks. My last show up here will be 2 weeks from today, and then I'll relocate, of course, on Friday the 22nd, and where I don't know, I would guess New Jersey or Long Island, New York. And I wouldn't mind doing a town or two on Long Island, but what worries me is getting there, because I would have to go through New York City, and after what I experienced just losing my GPS just coming across the George Washington Bridge, I can see myself winding up and down that, trying to figure out my way there. That's not quite Peachtree Street. I can finagle Peachtree Street even downtown, but no, I'm not going to get out there and fight with the New York cab drivers.
Ooh,
I can't imagine living there unless you were raised there. You know.
Yeah, I would love to go up there, but I'd want to be with somebody that knew their way around.
Well, that'd be the
yeah.
Way for me.
I've been to New York City 3 times, but in each occasion, you know, I was staying in either you know, somewhere else or, you know, in New Jersey or somewhere, and I took the subway and the buses everywhere, and I took a cab ride a couple times. But, you know, there again, I was with, you know, people that knew their way around, and I actually enjoyed it. I mean, it was a thrill to me, especially with one of the times I had just... I've been gone from working at Macy's for a couple of years, and I always wanted to go to the Herald Square store, which is the largest department store, or was at one time the largest department store in the world. And I went there, and that was a thrill for me. That store has been there, I don't know how long, but it still had, and this has been the early 2000s, or not early 2000s, early 1990s. I was there. They still had wooden escalators in that building. And they tried to maintain it as much as it was as it originally was if they could. But that was a neat building. And it's right across the street from the Empire State Building, which was smaller than I thought it was for some reason.
What's the name of it?
Macy's. The Macy's store on
Herald
Square.
Oh, Macy's. I thought you said something.
Yeah, it's where they, if you've ever seen Miracle on 34th Street, that was filmed in the Macy's on Herald Square. At Herald Square. Yeah. that was fun doing that, but I don't think I'd want to drive through there. I'll clean this up a little bit, but you know what a New York Echo is, don't you?
I have no idea.
You, Bobby?
No.
Hello? Shut the hell up! Actually, it's a little bit rougher than that, but that's way better than a New York Echo. Nothing new going on. Bobby,
We didn't lose anybody last week.
But I know Bobby's been thinking about him today, and I have. Can you believe it's been 2 years since we lost Rocky?
Yeah, I saw that today. It's sometimes it seems like a long time, and sometimes it's real fresh.
Yeah.
I sure do miss him.
He was so funny.
Oh. Goodness. Yeah, I'm surprised I haven't got any phone calls today from children.
Yeah. But other than that, no, I don't know of anyone we've lost.
Yeah, I haven't heard anything.
Lost one of the last remaining members of the Platters.
Yeah, I saw that.
We lost Richard Dawson this week.
Richard Dawson, and I don't know if either one of you have ever heard of him or were ever a fan of Fleetwood Mac prior to the Stevie Nicks, Lindsey Buckingham days, but they had a guitarist and a singer by the name of Bob Welch.
I saw that.
He had a hit with them, but then he released his first solo album. He redid the same song that he sang with them called Sentimental. So it was a big hit, probably 75, 76, somewhere in that time frame. I had thought about him in years, so I saw that, where he passed away. And, of course, Earl Watson, but there's no Doc Watson,
yeah.
The guitar player.
They had a story, an obituary in the Atlanta paper yesterday about Richard Dawson, and he said they estimated that on Family Feud he kissed 20,000 women on the lips.
Maybe that's what happened to him.
Esophageal cancer.
Yeah.
When I read that about him kissing all them women, he probably is pretty close to what Charlie Smith kissed all his years in the wrestling business.
Could be.
He
called yesterday, and I was on the phone, but he left me a voicemail. Asked me if I was coming to the get together this weekend. You guys doing something at the church, buddy?
Yeah, we're getting together Saturday and having lunch.
Well, let's see, if I leave tomorrow morning, I might be able to get that.
yeah, you can be here.
I have to go to Savannah and bypass Atlanta and go to Savannah.
Pick up Jerry. Yeah, I'm furnishing fried chicken, so it'd be worth the trip, you know. I'll even get some sweet tea.
Yeah, that's only a 23-hour drive.
Hey, it's not bad, for the good company.
Yeah, no doubt it'll be good company. I ain't going to miss it. See if you can ride Mr. Oates and see if you can't get him up there. Done you, Jerry. You go watch. You'll never miss an Oates.
I'm working this weekend, though.
Well, they won't miss you.
You never know.
Just tell them you're in pursuit.
Yeah. Hot pursuit. That's good.
Ride that ATV right on up there.
Yeah, that coyote's headed that way.
How far south of Tybee is St. Simon's?
Bobby, if I tell you, I'm going to probably be wrong. It's about 45 or 50 miles, I think.
Okay. There's a place on St. Simon's that's, it's actually owned by the Methodist Church, but I went down and did a wedding a few years ago, and a lady there told me, she said, because I was a Baptist minister, if I'd call, they'd give me a rate. And it's not on the ocean side; it's on the canal side of the island. But it was just a gorgeous, quiet place. That huge oak trees reminds me of what Jekyll used to be. And
on the canal side, you get a rake deck of that's where the alligators are.
Yeah, I guess. But we stayed there. You know, and when I went down to do the wedding a few years ago, and me and Debbie's been talking about riding down there, and I thought, you know, maybe I'll just show up on Tybee Island with a snake or something, tell them I need animal control.
You should.
Too bad, and then you'll be down there shooting off fireworks underneath your windows.
Yeah. This ain't got nothing to do with nothing other than just conversation, but the story about... I can't even remember what city it was in, where the policeman answered the call under a bridge on the interstate, and when he got there, the guy was naked, and he was chewing the face off of another guy.
Oh, yeah, you can see that on YouTube.
I mean, I don't know what this guy was on.
Oh, he was somewhere on the bath salts.
That was somewhere in Louisiana that happened. I told you.
It wasn't Rosalie, was it?
As long as there's stuff in gutters and you know, on the road, alongside the road in Louisiana, people are never too hungry. You probably just thought that was more roadkill.
Oh, jeez.
But there was a whole thing, and I didn't read it, but there was a whole thing of all that string of that happening down in Miami. People were zombies. I thought the first person I thought about, Bobby, was your wife. And I thought, well, the living dead is...
Yeah.
Come to life in Miami. I guess Debbie's headed down there.
Well, they interviewed some woman on WSB this morning here in Atlanta and wherever she lives. She said she used to date the guy, the one that they had to kill for chewing the face off the other guy. And she said he never showed any signs of being crazy or anything. Said he was always very polite and very nice to her. And I thought to myself, man, you just don't know who's sitting next to you when you're out there in a public place. Jeez. My wife said at least Hannibal Lecter had the decency to do it in private, you know.
I think I thought he was private. He can't get much more private than under a bridge.
Jeez.
There's some nuts out there.
That's Louisiana, man. Like I said, that's probably normal. That guy probably worked for the circus while we were down there.
He could.
Or he escaped from a traveling carnival or something. He was in the freak show as the glug-glug man. There used to be a guy that the carnival used to come to, the fair used to come to Mobile every year. There was a guy that would he'd eat frogs and then regurgitate them, and he was called the glug-glug man.
Oh, jeez.
Somebody flicked a cigarette at him one time. He picked that up and swallowed that. Maybe now we know what's happened to him. Louisiana under a bridge. Oh, Lord have mercy. All right, well, our special guest tonight will be a gentleman who had a long career in the wrestling business. Me and I were talking over the weekend. I think he's worked every territory there was to work, except for one or two. Worked all over the world, went to Japan, went to Europe, went to the Middle East, went to South Africa, I think. But we'll let him tell us about it when we get him on the air, and I'll take a break real quick, and when we come back, I'll get Mr. Bill White on the air with us and go with the stories. So I'll take a quick real quick.
Georgia wrestling fans, you're going to want to make your plans to be at Johnny G's the first, third, and fifth Sunday of every month, 2 p.m. bell time, for Rampage Pro Wrestling television taping. And fans, if you're in Middle Georgia, make sure that you watch Rampage Pro Wrestling on Fox 24, Saturday 9 a.m. on the My 41.2, Saturday at 10 p.m. Cox Communications Cable, Thursday 8, Saturday at noon, and of course, Rampage Rewind, the one-half-hour show on Cox Communications throughout the schedule. Fans, be there.
Do you remember Tommy Rich? What about Red Gunkel or Gordon Soley? Can't get those nasty Anderson brothers out of your head? Well, you can catch them again at GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com. Who was on the first card you attended? Who was it under that mask? Remember the first Omni Spectacular or the big main events at the Bell Auditorium? that happened in Columbus on my birthday. Find out at GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com. Whether you want to get back some of your past, or maybe you just want to find pro wrestling in your area, check out GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com.
If you're hurt, get the money you deserve. If you're in pain, get the money you deserve. At Terry and Peterman, we're personal injury attorneys who take a professional, thorough approach to your accident and injury claims. Don't call some long-distance law firm or satellite office. Don't trust your claim to just anyone. For a free consultation, call the law office of Terry and Peterman today, 229-247-0386, or go online at www.terryandpeterman.com. The law offices of Terry and Peterman, making things right.
This is Miss Rachel from The Empire, formerly known as Platinum Championship Wrestling. Every Friday night, The Empire presents the best in professional wrestling
at the Academy Theater in Avondale State.
We're also at the Masquerade every month or so.
Check us out on Facebook. Just look for Platinum Championship Wrestling.
And you'll get the latest details on all the hottest action from The Empire,
formerly known as Platinum Championship Wrestling.
We get it. That's every Friday night at the Academy Theater and at the Masquerade as well every month. We'll see you there.
Have you guys ever met Miss Rachel that's on in the commercial?
No, sir.
No, I've missed that opportunity.
I think I want to get her as a guest on our show just so I can tell her to forget it when she's talking.
Jerry, do you ever look on the website? Do you ever look at the thing Rich puts on there about the history, about what happened on certain days?
Yes.
Well, you know, I was sitting there today. And I was looking, and it had on there that I refereed in Griffin, Georgia, and I want to say it was 36 years ago. I think it was 76. And I looked at the list of matches, and, you know, I can't remember nothing about none of them. I mean,
That's funny.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you just – it's funny. There's some things I can recall, where I was, when I did it, what was like a circumstances.
Last night, right?
Yeah.
And there's some things I've seen stuff about, you know, I don't more remember that than anything.
Yeah.
You know, it just, it's funny that you said that because I'm the same way.
Yeah, it was just I don't know. I come by on my way home from my office every day. I come down Cortland Street and I pass right by the facade of the old City Auditorium here in Atlanta. And every day when I go by there, man, I can think of something that happened. I can't remember the year, but I think of something that happened there or something, you know, that went on there. And just, yeah, it's amazing. I mean, it's like total recall over certain instances, but then again, I looked at that thing today and I remember nothing about it. Nothing about it.
It's amazing.
And I see names of you probably do this too. I'll see names of guys that I was in the ring with that I can't put a face with that name if you were offering $100 bill.
I know. I'm the same way. It's amazing.
Yeah.
Let's see. Actually, that was 1975. Griffin Barnesville Sports Palace. Billy Spears over Bearcat Brown.
Thank you, Michael. It was 37 years ago.
Women's match. Prince of Little Dove and Honey Girl Pay. You should, there you go. You should remember Marie Laveau.
But I wasn't a referee. If you read on down, they said, see, that's something else. They said Dagmar was the referee, and I don't ever remember. I never remember meeting her until she came to the reunion in Mobile.
I thought Dagmar was out of the business by 73.
See, I thought she quit in 73 or something. I thought she quit while I was working for Gunkel. But maybe not. I mean, like I say, I can't. All the other people I remember, but and remember being in the ring with them, but I don't. I didn't her.
Well, maybe just a little. You didn't see her.
That could be. You reckon Dagmar closes her eyes at night and has nightmares about Lil?
Yep.
them two beat on each other for 20 years, I guess, or 15 years.
You know, I would still love for somebody to compile a record to see who worked the most against each other. There would be three, like my book, or three pairs. The Dagmar and Lil, the Sheik and Bobo Brazil, and Betty Nicolai and Gene Anton.
Those would be the three I'd bet on.
Jeez.
And in what order, I don't know.
I'd almost have to give it to Brazil and the Sheik. They started in the early 50s. And I think they had their last match against each other sometime around 1992 or 93. So I would probably give it to them too.
Mike, did you look at the classic clip today for today's date?
The Sheik
and Funk Jr. as tag team partners
against
Stan Stasiak and Don Kent.
Yeah.
And the Sheik was a babyface.
I actually had that many years ago, that whole show. Terry Funk was on that show. Mark Lewin was on that show. And Walter Johnson, if you guys remember him, as the football player from the Cleveland Browns. He actually wrestled in the off season and worked for the Sheik. And he was about as good as Otis Sistrom was.
All right, now take it easy. Jerry trained him.
What? I helped. Try.
It's your best, right, Jerry?
At least he was a star at what he did at one time.
It just didn't convert.
No.
Just didn't convert. Well, I'm going to dial up Mr. Bill Watson and see if we can't get him on the phone with us to see what he wants to allow us to do. Bill?
Yes.
Hey, it's Mike Lenores, P-State Pandemonium. How are you?
How are you doing tonight?
Doing fine. Also got Bobby Simmons and Jerry Oates on with us. Welcome to the show.
Jerry Oates, I ain't heard that name in a while.
Been a while, William.
Oh, now it's William.
I'll just have you guys know this Bill White character is the dirtiest player in the game.
Oh,
I got
on.
Behind him in Vegas. He went straight for my thumbs.
What'd you expect?
Bill, how are you, my boy?
How are you doing, sir?
I'm doing wonderful.
I can top that one, Bobby.
Uh-oh.
I went to arm drag him. He called for an arm drag one night right in my hometown in Columbus, Georgia. I went to arm drag him, and he pulled his arm out.
Hey.
And I fell flat on my back right in Columbus standing up, and he was looking at me.
What'd you expect me to do? Take a bump for you, too?
And the other thing I remember, let's see if you – do you remember what happened the night you and I were working in Americus, Georgia? You have to remember that.
That's a couple nights ago.
It was. We wound up on the floor. We wound up on the floor, which was a no-no. We're exchanging punches, and you hit a kid in the side of the head who got right between us. And his dad was a cop, and he drew his gun. You don't remember that?
I remember a lot of things like that happening in Georgia.
I turned Snow White.
Yeah, I guess you would. You shouldn't have tried to get
all you had to do was tell him you're the baby thing.
Hey, that's what I said. I didn't expect him to put the kid in the middle.
You were beating me to death, son.
Oh, come on now. Have mercy on my soul.
Where you living now, Bill?
I still live in South Carolina.
Really?
Oh, yeah. I hang out down there. I've been there since 72, so I figured I might as well stay there and retire if they'll ever let me.
Where were you from originally?
I was originally from Philadelphia.
Okay.
City of brotherly hate.
I was just in that lovely city about a month ago. I was just passing through the airport and then passing back out on my way back to New Jersey.
What were you doing in New Jersey?
I was in New Jersey with the circus, but I went to Philadelphia to the airport and flew to Atlanta for my daughter's college graduation, and then flew back to Philadelphia and then drove over back over to Vineland, New Jersey, which is where I was at the time.
I know Vineland quite well.
Nice town. Yeah, we did real well.
Oh, yeah.
There. Where did you break in, Bill? How did you get started in the wrestling business?
How did I get started in nursing, in the wrestling business? Well, it was all by accident. It honestly, truly was. It was all by accident. I was a scoutmaster in Clearwater, Florida, and I went over and was doing a project with the scouts over at Eddie's camp. We were doing a cleanup over there for him to get ready to open up the camp. And Jack Briscoe had just come in from Oklahoma, and they asked if we could put on a demonstration. Because Eddie knew me from New York. So I had wrestled at Penn State. And then we put on a little demonstration for the kids out there at the camp. And they asked me if I'd like to try out. A week or so later, they asked me if I'd like to try out to be a professional. Well, I wasn't doing anything, and I said, well, I might as well try out for it. Can't do nothing else, so I'll try out for it. So I went in there, and I made my little tryout and got the hell beat out of me. And about a week later, they said, well, you got some potential, but we'd like to send you off somewhere to get broke in. So they sent me to your uncle.
Which uncle?
Uncle Nick.
Uncle Nick, okay. Well, that's an introduction to the wrestling business.
Wasn't he in? Wasn't he everybody's uncle?
Well, let me ask you this: did you have silk drawers before you went, or after you left there?
Oh, well, let me tell you something. When I drove into Tennessee, I drove in a 1961 Lincoln Continental, and when I left, I left in a 1958 Cadillac.
Oh,
that tell
man.
You anything?
Most of them leave on a Greyhound bus.
Well, I was lucky. I didn't spend all my money in Nashville. No, I was fairly lucky. I left there and I went out to California, and met up with Roy Shires out there. Again, it was just a hit and a miss type situation. I called Roy Shires and I asked him if I have a tryout. I said, Roy, you don't know me. You don't know anything about me. And I've got about a year experience in business. So, after about three or four tries at that, he finally figured out that I wasn't going to give up so easy. So he says, come out to Sacramento TV. So I went out to Sacramento TV, and he put me in the ring with Ray Stevens. And when Ray got done with me, he told Roy Shire that I had some potential to make use of it. And that's really where my career took off, right there. If I had Pat Patterson and Ray Stevens to thank for that. I stayed out there for about 2 years, and then was going home back to Philadelphia, New Jersey, and they called up Vince McMahon and told Vince Sr. That I was coming that way, that I was a good hand, I guess. Possibly use me, you know, it was good. So I wound up staying in New York for about a year and a half, 2 years, and went back down to Florida. And then I traveled all over ever since.
How long were you actually full-time active?
From 19... I'd say late 1964, 65, to 1987, I think it was.
Hmm. And you and I were talking the other day. There wasn't too many territories that you didn't hit. I didn't realize that you were Tennessee. That was one that I figured you didn't go to at the time.
Where was that?
I said, when you and I were talking the other day, we were talking about how many territories you hit. I didn't think about Tennessee, and that would have been one that I didn't know you worked in.
I think everybody worked there at one time or another.
Nobody but Jerry Oates.
Jerry Oates did, too. Don't let
no, sir.
Oh, come on now.
Never graced it. Never did. I was told not to.
I was that ain't what I heard. Oh, it was Mobile that you was at. That's what it was.
Yeah, he was in Mobile. He was in Mobile a time or two.
Yeah.
People get mad because I didn't go to Tennessee. I don't know.
I don't know who was worse, Jerry or Ted.
That's been debatable.
Yeah, I know it. They're both crowbars.
You don't believe it? Ask Frank Hickey.
Yeah, I can believe that one. I can believe that one. So what you doing now, Ted?
This is Jerry.
Jerry, I'm sorry.
It must have been Ted that was the stiffest. You still remember.
Okay. That was all them knots on his head. He can, you know.
I'm living in Savannah
I'm
now.
I'm still trying to recuperate.
I'm in Savannah.
So what are you doing now, Jerry?
I work at Tybee Island. Do animal control out there for them.
Oh.
Love it.
Now let me interpret what he just told you. He rides around in a little four-wheel gator or golf cart, checks out the women on the beach, talks, does public relations, and if somebody calls with an animal problem, he calls somebody to take care of it.
That's right, I'm on the beach.
I can believe it.
I mean, it's a tough life, but somebody has to do it.
Come on.
Come on. Fess up now. Fess up.
So where in South Carolina do you live?
Down in Greenville, Spartanburg.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I've been mayor since 72.
Did you live in that area when you worked for Crockett, or was you actually in Charlotte?
I lived in Charlotte, and then I got tired of Charlotte. It got too big for me, and then I moved down here to South Carolina.
Oh, okay.
Because it ain't but 90 miles from Charlotte, so it wasn't really that bad for me to.
Yeah.
You know, as much driving as we did back then, 90 miles didn't mean nothing.
Yeah, when you seen something on your booking sheet and it was 90 miles or less, man, you was like a day off.
It was worse than that.
Oh, I can remember in Atlanta, we used to love to see Athens. We started running Rome on Thursday night, so we knew it was going to be an easy day, on Thursday, because it was close to Atlanta. That was, of course, unless you had Macon TV on Thursday afternoon. And then had to come right back through Atlanta in that 5 o'clock rush hour traffic to go to Rome.
Yeah. Yep. Talk about Rome. I had, isn't that where we dressed upstairs?
No. Where was this?
Is that the bar that was there?
No. Now Athens was the Heels dressed in a bar, in the bar part of that building. But it was just one story. But yeah, they actually dressed in the bar there.
Now that must have been where I'm thinking about. Dickie Slater, myself. I'm trying to think. There was three or four other guys that was there in that dressing room at that time. And the cops come in. There was six cops that surrounded the room. And they all had their hands on their guns. And they said, "We understand that you guys have weapons in here. Well, we would like you to set them on the table here in front of us." We wound up pulling out 27 guns. It was a rib that the guys had pulled. Honestly, I never did figure out who did it, but it was a rib that they pulled on us. And the cops looked at us and said,
"Who was booking at the time?
If you guys ever got in trouble, we'd be in trouble ourselves."
Who was booking at the time?
Tom Runesto.
You just answered your own question, sir.
That's who booked the real bumpy.
You just answered your own question.
No, because Jody was in on it. I mean, Jody was in the locker room at the time.
Well, it don't matter. It didn't matter.
Do you think Tom Runesto was?
Oh, in a heartbeat. in a heartbeat.
That's probably when all of them had bought those Browning 9mm.
Uh-huh.
Oh, jeez.
I remember that.
That same that room you're talking about, they built some kind of, you know, they had I've never drank, so I don't know what you call them, but you know, in a bar, when they've got the liquor, they take the bottle and they turn it over and actually set it in the tap so you can hit the button and it'll deliver one shot. Well, they would take the bottles out, and they had this wood cover built that would go over it where they could lock it. Well, Luke Graham figured out that if you got on either end of it with a red solo cup, you could get one shot out of each button that you hit. So he had reached down on one end as far as he could and hit all the buttons. Then he would go to the other end and take his other arm and stick it in and hit the buttons. And by the time he hit all of them, he'd have a red solo cup full of whatever was in there.
Well, that sounds like him.
He was the only guy that I was ever in the ring with that I actually wanted him to have a drink before we went to the ring, because he was very calm and sedate when he had one.
Yeah. Talk about Crazy Luke, right? You're talking
yes.
about Crazy Luke?
Oh, yeah.
Tell you a little thing about Crazy Luke and Tarzan Tyler. We were in Bangor, Maine, and they were having an argument. And they said one could outdrink the other one. You know, it was like a Bobby Bruggers thing, one bragging about the other. Okay. Anyway, they were talking about how they could outdrink each other. Well, then Graham says, I can down a fifth of liquor without bringing it back up. And Tyler says, there's no way in hell. He says, if you can do it, I can do it. He says, I'll go first. He says, I'll bet you $1,000. They wound up taking Tyler to the hospital with alcohol poisoning.
Oh, geez.
Yeah. You talk about somebody that got irate, you should have heard Vince McMahon Sr. Here's the main event in the hospital with alcohol poisoning. And the next night they were supposed to be from Bangor, Maine, they were supposed to go to Boston Garden the next night. Which didn't sit very well with him.
Oh.
Lucky they weren't in the program with Carl Gotch and Renee Gallet at the time. I'd probably had to be drunk to get in the ring with Carl Gotch.
Yeah, no kidding.
No.
Some of the things that happened in our business when we were back then.
Did you ever work with Gotch?
No, I didn't. I had worked out with him one time, and that was enough. Down there in Tampa, Florida, Malenko talked me into coming in and working out with him one night. I said, oh, my God, I just hope I'd live through it. He could tie you up more ways than anybody that I've ever seen.
I'll take your word for it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I wonder who was a bit more dangerous here, or Danny Hodge.
Gotcha.
Danny Hodge was a baby compared to some of these guys. And by saying baby, I mean he knew more holds or knows more holds and forgot about more holds than 99% of the wrestlers. But the guy was phenomenal with his tendon strength.
Yeah.
I mean, even today, I had Danny Hodge up at the University of Illinois doing a seminar up there. And at the end of the seminar, he took about six of the guys and was showing them different holds. And you wouldn't believe how these little kids, young kid would scream. College kid, that old man was making them scream.
He had some on the front porch down at Mobile a couple of years ago or 3 years ago. He was demonstrating some moves on the front porch there, and there were some yells coming up from the gallery.
Yeah, I can believe that.
Oh.
But you know the phenomenal thing about Danny is like I said, his tendon strength in his hands. And the coach had heard about his strength. And he asked Danny at the end of this program, he says, is it true that you can squash an apple right off the tree? He says, if I had an apple here, I could, and about that time, here come an apple up from the audience. One of the kids had sent him up an apple. He says, pick up that trash can, I'll show you. And he turned his hand up, held it, stuck it down in the thing, and squished it, and the apple popped, just like mush popped up. He says, just instantly. And it was, everybody's eyes just got buggy watching him do it. But he is a very kind-hearted gentleman.
Yes.
Even when he was wrestling, he didn't go in there to hurt anybody or to cripple anybody, though he could in any many times. The guy was.
Tough on those that wanted to just coast, though, or they stay in a rest hold or something and didn't work work like they were trying to get out of it. He would cinch up on those guys.
Yeah.
Very serious about the business, I will say that.
Oh, yeah.
Bill, out of all the places you worked, what was your favorite territory?
I would have to say Charlotte. And the reason I say Charlotte is because, like I said, I'd been there since 1972, and I finished up in 88, somewhere in that area. And every time I would get a little bit stale, Jim Crockett would send me out. He'd send me to Japan. He'd send me to Europe. He sent me to other territories. He'd farm me out to different things, and he made sure that I was taken care of too. And so I couldn't very well down the territory or anybody that was in it and run it.
I never had the privilege to meet Mr. Crockett Sr., but everybody I've ever heard talk about him said he was absolutely a gentleman to work for.
Beyond a shadow of a doubt. Without question. The man, if he said something to you, he meant it.
This seems to be a common thread that people say that worked in Charlotte, that were privileged enough to work in Charlotte. Jerry said that was his favorite territory. Bill Baldwin and Joe Turner have both been on with us. They said the same thing. Les Thatcher has always said that was his favorite territory as far as working goes.
You worked your tail off. You worked 7, 8, 9 times a week. The guys today, I don't think, could do that. And maintain the road run that we did.
Well, even if they did work that many times a week nowadays, it wouldn't add up to the number of minutes that you put in one or two matches back in those days.
usually the first or second match went Broadway.
Exactly.
And that was 15, 20 minutes, and they stretched that out sometimes.
Do you watch so-called wrestling today?
I glance at it if I get a chance. I don't. There's some guys on there that I still think about. They're in the background now. Like Briscoe and a few of the others. They're pretty good, I try to stay up with them and see how things are going. They were here last Monday night in Greenville, and I went down to see them, see a couple of the guys. I walked in the back parking lot and up on the ramp, and I wouldn't go inside. All I did was ask if I could talk to Jerry. And They said they sent him out. We were standing there talking, and next thing I know, the guard was coming out telling me I had to leave. He was to go back inside. So I just went ahead and left. Come on back home.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, he does not. What gets me is he says he gives out all these passes and all that stuff and to different organizations and stuff like that. And I've wrote to him on several occasions when he was having shows down here that I got a little boy that 7 years old. He was born with a half a heart. And he just idolized John Cena. And I've been trying to get him to, the wrestling matches. And I even had Make-A-Wish write a letter for him. And I have never got a reply back from him yet.
Pretty sad, isn't it?
Business has definitely changed.
Oh, the business has definitely changed. Definitely.
And the funny thing is, he keeps, in the background, like you said, he keeps, as far as road agents, people like Dusty and Gary Briscoe and, those type around, but. Their style, I don't know what they're really doing because what kind of influence they actually have over the business itself, because it all seems to be all done by comedy writers and
they wound up having, they got like 16 writers now. And like you said, the older guys, Slaughter, Dusty, Briscoe, even Michael doesn't, they don't have the influence you would think on running a program.
Is Pat Patterson still there?
I don't know if he's there or not. I didn't see him, Monday when I was down there.
Jerry, I don't think he is. I think he's living out in Vegas or somewhere out that way, because Charlie Smith tells me that sometimes when he goes out to his conventions, he'll hook up with Nick and Pat for dinner while he's out there. So
okay.
I'm not sure if he's working with them or not.
No, I don't think he is. I think he may be, some sort of...
Didn't he have stroke cancer?
I hadn't heard that.
Didn't he have some kind of cancer or throat cancer? I thought somebody said he had throat cancer.
I don't know. I hadn't heard that.
And
now I know Heenan did.
Oh, that maybe that's what I.
Yeah, Heenan did.
He's not in very good shape anymore.
Mm-hmm.
It's so funny that he made his living with his mouth, and he can't even talk anymore.
Yeah. So many of those guys, how did they get this cancer that they got today?
No.
Isn't that what Buddy Roberts had?
Yeah.
Cancer.
Gordon Solie died from throat cancer.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And I may be speaking out of turn. I'm not sure, but I'm very worried about Danny Miller.
Yeah, I talked to
him. For some reason, that's come into my mind. That's come into my mind that... something is wrong with Danny, because when I saw him down in Mobile, he wasn't looking exactly as peaked as he should be.
Yeah.
Well, he had had some sort of throat surgery because I talked to him in Mobile about doing the show, and I called him a couple weeks after that, and his voice, he was still real raspy, and he said that he was going to the doctor to check back with him. And I called him about a month ago, I guess, and he had had the surgery, and to give him a couple months and see how he got over that. But we were trying to get him on the show, but hopefully that was enough to carry it. So is there anybody else that you keep up with that lives around the Charlotte area that you stay in touch with for the business?
I run into a bunch of them here and there and you know, different independent shows, but not that I really keep up with. Not too many that stay around the Charlotte area. Greenville, Spartanburg area, they all stay up like in Charlotte, Raleigh, stuff like that.
I think Ivan Koloff is in...
he's in Greenville. He's in Greenville, North Carolina.
That was one of the towns that I did at the start of the season with the circus. And somebody told me that he was there.
He's still signing books and autographs and pictures at Kmart and stuff like that.
Yeah, I tried to get in contact with him too, and wasn't able to hook up with him. I guess Jackie Fargo's in where is it? China Grove, North Carolina. I don't know if you ever worked with Jackie. I know you, as long as you were in the Carolinas, you knew Sonny, but I didn't know if you ever worked with Jackie.
Yeah, I knew Sonny. Yeah, I knew Jackie too. I worked Jackie in Georgia.
Oh, really? Didn't realize he'd come to Georgia.
Huh?
I didn't realize that he had come to Georgia after.
Yeah, he was down there with his partner, the tall, skinny kid. It was his partner for a while. I can't think of his name. Brandy, you got to think. Yeah, Sonny passed away, 3 years ago now?
At least, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know Sonny was having real bad problems with diabetes when he had his leg cut off, and then they went to take the other leg, and I think he just gave up.
Knowing Sonny is the referee for that Charlotte territory, and that's where I met him and got to know him a little bit. And then going back and looking at some of those old tapes out of Tennessee, man, that's you talk about Jekyll and Hyde.
Rough House Fargo.
Goodness.
Rough House Fargo.
Yep.
I'm assuming you knew passed away recently, that you worked a program with in Mobile, was Gorgeous George Jr.
Yeah, I heard about that. Yeah. I was glad to see him at Scott Teal's and then down in Mobile too. This last time. Didn't he go to Mobile this last time?
He was there this last time. He was there last
year. Yeah, 2 years ago.
Years ago, it was last year, 2010, or not 2011.
Yeah, I got to see him when we were at that reunion at Scott Teal's just before.
If you had to name one person that was your favorite guy to work with, and I know that's a difficult question, who were some of the guys or the guy that you thought you had your best matches with?
best matches I've ever had was with Jack Briscoe, number one. Then with Wahoo McDaniel. And not everybody could work with Wahoo. He'd get a little crazy every once in a while. But I really enjoyed working with him. I super liked Jack because, and Danny Miller too, because when we'd go in the ring, we would go in there and wrestle a little bit before we actually go into our little program.
Did you see
that? That's one of the things I really enjoyed doing, was going in there and working my tail off. And it didn't matter who it was with, whether it was with Wahoo or Jack Briscoe or Jerry Oates or whoever.
Did you ever work with Johnny Weaver?
Oh yes. Oh yes.
I never had that pleasure. I heard that was a pleasure.
Oh yes. Yes, I did. Nelson Royal, Johnny Weaver. Yes, many, many times.
Nelson was a good worker too.
You know how he broke into business? That was funny. I heard the story that how he broke into business.
You talking about Nelson?
No, Johnny Weaver.
No.
I can't think of who was in the ring at the time. And they said that he could make anybody a wrestler. And this was all a work anyway. But you got to appreciate it. The guy was in the ring and he had just lost his partner. And he could take anybody and make him into a wrestler. And they had Johnny selling popcorn at the Park Center. And Johnny, you know how skinny Johnny is anyway. And he said, I'll even take that popcorn man and make him into a wrestler. But that was the funniest thing I've ever seen in the business, was his progression as he went in. And then they got to working with Sweet Hansen and Rip Tyler, or Rip Hawk. Rip Hawk and Sweet Hansen. And then Johnny Weaver went from who was his partner?
George Becker.
George Becker, that's it. That's who introduced him into the business. In Charlotte, anyway. But you know, in that family, who was the better worker? Was his wife.
If she could work.
Penny Banner. She was a doll. I mean, she could handle herself pretty good in there.
That ain't her, though, is it?
Sir?
Well, that was Bobby.
Do what?
Wife. Oh. I still thought you were talking to him. You were talking to Debbie.
I have to check in with the boss every second or so here.
Yeah. Somebody's got to keep you straight, Bobby.
You got that right. And it's a full-time job, sir.
It's worse than that.
Too many hours on the road with Charlie Smith. It'll get the best of you.
Well, the only thing you got going, the only good thing you got going for you is the man upstairs is watching over you.
Yes.
Because if he wasn't, Charlie would have had you corrupted.
I understand. Yes, sir. Yeah, my wife says after going to Mobile in Vegas with Charlie every year, it takes about 3 months to get me straightened out.
I don't doubt that. For some real reason, I don't doubt that.
Oh, maybe Well, now Michael, here's something Bill maybe can shed some light on, since he's in Vegas every year and has a good time there, and he's wins the cribbage tournament. He won it 2 years in a row and was in the finals this year. Shed some light on the Super Tramp guy walking around with the mask on out there.
I have no earthly idea. I really don't.
Nobody else does either. We've been trying to figure that deal out.
Maybe he's related to the Hangman Bruce Probance.
Four letters, M-A-R-A.
I don't know.
Speaking of masks, Bill, you work quite a bit. I know in Florida you worked as the Scorpion. Is that the only territory you work under hood?
No. I used the Scorpion a lot of places. They would send me out to... Well, The Charlotte territory is the one that gave me the Scorpion outfit. I mean, it had me go as a Scorpion. Because Bill White was getting just a little bit too recognizable, as I would say. And then I would come back as a Scorpion. But I worked mostly in the Charlotte area as a Scorpion. I worked the Toronto area as a Scorpion. Like you said, the Florida area. And
I can't imagine working that Fort Hessling Armory in Tampa under a hood. Why does that building work? I can't imagine working the armory in Tampa under a hood as hot as that building was naturally. I had the pleasure working in the open a couple times under a mask, and that building was miserable too.
Yeah. They had some bad places, that you really, if you wasn't adapted to that hood, you really could lose it.
What's the worst building you ever worked in? I know, again, that's like working with who's the best person to work with. You worked in so many places for the years. What's
the worst building that I can think of off the top of my head was down in, I think, it's south of Macon. Is it America's? No. What's the town down south on, I guess it's 75, going towards the state line? Oh, I can't think.
Down 75? Was it a regular town?
Yeah.
Was it Valdosta, Waycross, Albany?
That was over the other way. This was right on the main drag, and what it was an old skating ring.
That's Albany. Allison Skating Ring in Albany, Georgia.
Where they had the plywood for a dressing room?
That's it.
That's the same dressing room Armstrong knocked down, isn't it?
No, that was in America.
That was America.
That was at the fairgrounds there. But yeah, the skating ring was, the baby faces had a plywood room built, and the heels had a plywood there for a while, and then they started letting them dress in the room where the skate rental, where they kept the skates.
Where they kept the skates.
Yeah, it smelled like feet.
And
it was okay till guys like Gene Anderson figured out they could come to the ring with that axle grease on their hand. And you'd go to check them with your referee shirt on, and they'd rub it all over you.
Now, come on. Gene Anderson wouldn't do stuff like that. Now, if you'd have said holy, I'd agree with you.
Oh.
Well, I thought for sure you'd say the Wade Kennedy Farm Center in Hattiesburg, or maybe the Rainbow Rink in Panama City.
Yeah. Nah.
The Hattiesburg, I'll go along with that.
Hattiesburg is bad. I'd still say that skating rink was, to me, was the worst.
Ooh. That building drew some money, though.
Yes, it did.
Yeah, it did. Well, you talk about Albany.
Yeah.
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 Yeah, they had. I was gonna say Albany. That's the town where the guy where Drummo brought the two snakes home in the car that night.
Hmm.
I have fond memories of that place. When you started talking about buildings, you were talking about on the main drag, Jerry. I don't know if you ever worked this one or not. Did you ever work I want to say they called it the Agriculture Center or something in Dublin, Georgia. It had a wood floor where they auctioned cattle. I mean, it had a dirt floor where they auctioned cattle.
Yes.
And you had to take a shower. They didn't have showers. They had a water hose in the horse stalls out behind the building. And you
I've
had
done
to go
all
out
that.
There. You had to go out there and stand and hold the water hose for each other.
I've done all that.
Oh, yeah.
I'm sure you have, Jerry.
Me and Jody Hamilton standing out there one night, and we both got so tickled, nobody had really said anything. We were just dying laughing, and he finally looked at me and said, "Why are you laughing?" I said, "Well, I'm just thinking what somebody would think if they come around the corner and saw two grown men, one of them wearing a mask, and we squirting each other with a water hose."
It wouldn't be so bad, but the other one was a referee.
Yeah. Oh.
Yeah. You talk about dirt floors. Have either of you worked in Texas?
There he is.
We're in Texas.
At Houston. At the fairgrounds.
I was working in the Sam Houston Coliseum when I was there.
I mean,
you're talking about Fort Worth.
Fort Worth.
Yeah.
I'm sorry,
yeah.
Not Houston. Fort Worth.
That was at the stockyard.
It took you forever to go from the dressing room to the ring.
It sure did. I remember that well.
The floor was nasty, dirty, full of cow shit, and you had to walk all the way to the ring. And you talk. By the time you got there, you was sick. It was hot. It was nasty. There was no kind of circulation whatsoever in that building. And you talk about something awful. To me, that was the raunchiest place I've ever had to wrestle, where you get sick real easy.
You worked in the Middle East too, didn't you, Bill?
Yeah.
What was that like?
Yep. In Korea or in Japan or Japan?
Now, didn't you work
was, in? Sir.
No, I thought you went to the Middle East somewhere, Iran or Iraq or somewhere like that. Didn't you work in the Middle East at one point?
No,
there?
No.
Okay.
No, I didn't. I didn't make the tours there. I went to Africa. I did Africa, Korea, Japan, New Zealand, and Australia. Over in that part of the world.
Who was running Australia when you went to Australia?
Oh gosh. That's so long ago, I forgot.
Was it after Barnett, though?
I don't recall. I honestly, truly don't recall.
I think Barnett sold out in sometime in late 72 or 73. When did he buy into the Georgia office, Bobby? Because it was all around that same time frame.
73 or 74.
That's right, Gary. You were supposed to go, weren't you?
Yeah.
Australia.
Did you work for Steve Rickard in Australia, New Zealand?
Yeah. Did he buy that from Gunkel? Did he buy Atlanta from Gunkel?
No, bought it from Lester Welch.
Yeah, Gunkel died in 72. And Welch and Fuller and Eddie Graham came up here, and that's when they got in the deal with Ann, and Ann took all the talent and started her own thing in November. And Barnett came in probably, first time I heard Barnett's name was probably in January of 73, maybe. Maybe a little after that even.
Because they pretty much did a swap, because Fuller and Jerry Jarrett were supposed to buy Australia, or did buy Australia from Barnett, and then they didn't last over there very long, and they sold to a local guy that was there, and I wish I could think of his name. Dundee called his name when he was on the show with us. I can't think of the guy's name, but he was an Australian guy. And then I think at some point Larry O'Day and Ron Miller wound up with Australia.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember when that was. I think it was sometime in 73, early 73, something like that.
It all changed.
Was Renesto booking for Barnett?
Yeah.
He came in, Barnett, Gunkel shut down in 74, November, and Harley Race was the booker at the time. And that's when I went to work for Barnett, was in November of 74. And Renesto came in probably in January or February of 75. It was about an 8 week, maybe 8-9 week lapse in the time Gunkel shut down and he came in.
And that's when the Andersons was in there.
Well, the Andersons, they were in and out, and then the Andersons, and then actually they came in. They took Renesto's play, and I can't remember time frame wise, but they came
I'll
in to
tell
book.
You when it was 76.
76. Okay. Well, they
no. Wait a minute. Yes, 76.
Well, then they came in. The deal was they were supposed to be co-bookers. That's the way they were introduced. As co-bookers, that they both had equal authority and blah, 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 blah. And after a week, it was quite evident who the domineering one was going to be. And and eventually it became sort of Ole's deal, and Gene just kind of filled in the blanks and laid back, yeah. But that was, I mean,
Watson
it was
on the line, wasn't he?
Do what?
I said, wasn't Bill Watts? No, Bill Watts was in there while Gunkel was running, wasn't he?
Yeah, Bill was here when Gunkel was running. Yeah.
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 That's one territory. Did you ever work Oklahoma, Bill?
Yes, I did.
You made those trips too, huh?
For Bill Watts.
Now, did you work for Watts or did you work for McGurk?
I worked for McGurk and Watts.
Okay.
I was sent out
You
there.
Worked out there, you worked for the Department of Transportation. Let me tell you, friend. But you know, I love that territory. I actually loved it.
didn't bother me at all. That was the one place you always knew where you stood with him. I did, anyhow, you know. It wasn't, you'd have to worry about nothing.
What's Jody Hamilton doing now?
Well,
Retired? Or?
Yeah, I think so. I think he kind of just hangs around the house. He lives in Griffin, Georgia. And we kind of communicate by email, and I don't see him much. Nick, his son, is retired, and he's got a house down there next to Joe. And
what's he doing?
We're doing some personal training, I think. Last time I seen him was at Ted Allen's memorial service, and he was in the best shape I'd ever seen him in.
Good for him.
He said he was doing some personal training, and he has an autistic son that's probably about 20 now, maybe a little older, and he takes care of him, and that's pretty much what he was doing.
And the last time I heard of Jody, he was sheriff out in St. Joe, Missouri.
No, that was Sonny Myers.
That was Larry. That was Mahler.
Larry Sonny. Hamilton, that's right.
Yeah,
Sonny Myers.
Bolo.
Yeah,
out there.
Right, him and Ernesto was the Bolos.
Well, Larry was out there, some kind of sheriff or something, and then he might have been working with who'd you say, Jerry, Sonny Myers?
Yeah.
Yeah, they might have been working together. And then Larry eventually ran a bail bond business. Can you imagine skipping bond and Larry Hamilton coming looking for you?
No, sir.
Me neither. I can sit here and say this with my hand in the air. Out of all the people I was ever in the ring with in the wrestling business, out of all of them, I was never afraid of any of them but Larry Hamilton.
He was a different...
I was as afraid of him as I am a loaded gun pointed at me.
He was a different fellow. I liked him, but he was different.
He never said a cross word to me. He never treated me anything but kind. But he scared me. And I mean, I'm a 17-year-old kid sitting in the dressing room, and I didn't have super long hair, but it was over my ears. And he'd sit in there and talk about hippies and wanting to line them up and shoot them all and young punks and all this stuff. And I just sit over in the corner and draw up my knot. And then, of course, getting in the ring with him, and he's going to hit me for a DQ, and he got within about 4 or 5 inches of me, and I took off flying to take a bump. That didn't help matters none.
No.
And I laid down. I was afraid to look at him. I peeped out of one eye and looked up at him, and he was laughing at me. You know, I mean, just. But, yeah, I can't imagine jumping bail knowing he was coming to look for me.
No, because he would find you.
Oh.
One way or the other.
Oh, yeah.
And bring you back, too.
Oh, yes.
It might be tied to the bumper of the car, but you'd be coming back.
Yeah, or stretched across the hood or something, but...
I don't know if
lack of cooperation.
Any of you guys ever around David Schultz?
I was never around Schultz.
Never met him.
I've met him several times.
He's about the same way.
Isn't he a bounty hunter up in Canada?
Well, he was for a while, but I think he got out of that. And last I heard, he was driving a truck, and he was back. He was from Jackson, Tennessee, and I think that's where he was. He was back in Tennessee driving a truck. But yeah, he did that for a while, and he was partnered with somebody that was also a wrestler. I can't think of who it was.
Randy Colley.
Randy Colley,
wasn't
it?
I didn't remember Randy Colley. He sure was. It was Randy.
Yeah, David Schultz got in big trouble in New York for having a gun.
Oh, really?
He walked into Madison Square Garden carrying a gun, and I don't know if any of you guys have ever been there. Back then, they had the detectors, the metal detectors. When you went into Madison Square Garden, you know the law in New York is an automatic 7 years.
Oh, geez.
And I don't know how Vince Jr. got him out of that mess.
I wonder if that's when they use the excuse that he slapped Don Stossel for firing him. I've heard different versions of that story. I've heard it was that he threatened to beat up Mr. T prior to WrestleMania, and they were afraid that was going to blow WrestleMania. They built that whole thing around Mr. T. And Schultz wasn't happy about it. He threatened to show him who was the toughest. I wonder if all that was just a story they floated out there to cover up to him with that gun charge.
Well, didn't he slap somebody on TV?
Yeah, he slapped John Stossel on TV.
Yeah. And that's why he got fired.
Well, I'd heard that, but I'd also heard that he had a run-in with Mr. T prior to WrestleMania. Because he still worked for Ben for several months after that John Stossel thing. But who knows?
You know, the John Stossel thing, you know, he didn't do anything to Stossel that any of the rest of us would not have done had we been asked that question during that time frame.
I would believe that's to be true.
You know, I mean.
About all wrestling being fake.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, when a guy questions your credibility back in the day, you defended your business. And if you didn't, you didn't want to go back in the dressing room.
A lot of guys got in trouble for defending it too, buddy.
Yep.
Well, then Vince comes up and opens up everything.
Oh.
So he would have to say athletic.
No, well, it was his
thing in Mississippi to keep being athletic in Mississippi.
Well, I just told him I wasn't coming back.
What was that about Mississippi?
My first night booked in Mississippi, I went over, and when I get to the town, I'm working with Kurt Von Hess. And the only three wrestlers that show up is myself, Sonny King, and Kurt Von Hess. Speedy Hatfield's the referee, and we had them outnumbered. And went out and worked about 30 minutes, did a little deal where Sonny King saves me. He rolls in, works about 30 minutes, and we're going home. So they come in to pay me, and they hand me a little envelope. And it felt pretty thick. I thought, And I opened it up, and there was 35 $1 bills in there. And about the time I got it counted and folded up and stuck it in my pocket, this little guy walked in. He was bigger around than he was tall, and he told me he was the commissioner, and he needed $30 for a license. And I just politely told him I didn't need one because I wouldn't be back.
Well, they didn't blame you for not drawing, did they, Bobby?
I have no idea. Von Hess and Sonny King's name was on top of that card. I was like the plus one other match. What was the name of that town? I didn't think I'd ever forget it.
Was it Corinth, Mississippi?
McLean, Mississippi.
So that wasn't a town. Well, see, by the time you came in 77, they had just about quit running Mississippi, because Mississippi,
I can certainly understand why.
Well, when Kelly and Bobby Fields were running it, they drew real well, and Bill and Jerry can both tell you, because they worked, you know, down there in those days when Kelly was pushing. But see, Kelly retired at the end of 76, and they quit running Mississippi, but I guess they had to have Speedy something to do, because he was always more or less the promoter of record over there, and he lived that time in Hattiesburg or Laurel or somewhere. But anyway, McLean wasn't a town that when they were running full time, that wasn't even a town that they ran. I don't even know if they ever ran spot shows there. So, and that's probably what it was. It was just a spot show of some sort. That's probably why nobody else showed up. even, you and Sonny King and Kurt Von Hess were fairly new to the territory. You guys
and we killed McLean, Mississippi.
Oh, is that your claim to fame?
Oh, jeez. Oh.
God, well, they're all dead now, so.
Yeah, I heard that.
They were here last week, last Monday, but I don't know how they did.
Who's that?
New York.
Did you go down and volunteer
to
guest referee or something?
No, sir, I didn't even go near that civic center.
You know what tickles me? They say how like they had the Bilo Center last Monday night, and they said it was sold out, 19,721 people, this, that, and the other. And if you look at the background, you can see whole sections, and there's nothing there. There was no people in those seats. How can you have a sellout and you have whole sections empty?
Well, same way they rewrite wrestling history. They can say whatever they want because the winner gets to write the history.
They give away at these big shows. They give away a minimum 250 tickets.
Oh, I'm sure.
Then they let any GI that wears a uniform come in for free.
Well, you know why that is. They're making their money off T-shirts and the phone fingers, all that other stuff that they sell.
Oh yeah,
that's where their money is. Their money is in their merchandising. The rest of their TV show, their pay per views, all that stuff is just
all that's paid for.
Commercials, all this commercials for their sell their gimmicks.
Yeah. Look at all those shirts that Cena's been selling. Of course, you don't get. don't you wish you could sell that many T-shirts?
I do it in the right price.
And get 50 cents a piece off every one of them.
I didn't bring it up, Jared. I didn't tell him anything about it.
That's all we're saying about
this
it.
This is not a setup.
Well, Bobby, what did Barnett tell you he was paying Hogan for selling T-shirts? This was 20-something years ago.
Just before Christmas, he called. When Barnett left here, he went up and he was a controller for Titan Sports there for a while, and he called me, I guess it was just before Christmas. He just called to say hey, and we were talking, and he told me, Mr. Bobby, he said, I'm writing the biggest check I've ever written a wrestler in as long as I've been in the business. And I said, really? I said, how much are you writing it for? And he said, $1 million. And I said, $1 million? He said, yep, it's going to Hulk Hogan. He said, and it's not for wrestling. It's for all the gimmicks, the cartoons, the dolls, the T-shirts. That was his commission.
Hmm. Yep.
And Barnett, along with other people that I worked for, he wouldn't let the guy sell nothing. I mean, he didn't even. The only thing we ever did. The whole time I worked for him, the only thing we ever did was we did a calendar one year.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, I think the guys that was on the calendar, I think he paid them $1,000 a piece for their picture, had it done professionally, and then we had I flew to Minneapolis up there. The biggest calendar company in the world is in Minneapolis. It's Brown and Bigelow. And we had them do the calendar, and then we sold them on TV through the, mail order only. We didn't sell them in the arenas at all.
How'd you do with them?
You know, Jerry, I'm thinking, and this may be wrong, but I'm thinking he grossed somewhere around $75,000-$80,000.
That's not shabby.
And after expenses and everything, I think he paid out, or he.
I'm thinking I wrote out checks, you know, dividends to the people that had points in the office for a total of $50,000. But all of that shook down right around the time Ole decided to pull the little deal to take over the office. So I'm not real sure how all that played out. But I'm thinking $50,000 is what, after expenses, it cost about $30,000 to produce it and mail them and do everything we did.
Did you guys have any T-shirts left this year?
We're in Vegas.
Vegas, yeah.
No, he sold out there. We were sold out by Tuesday afternoon about 3 o'clock.
Yeah, that purple went over good, didn't it?
Yeah, it did. Yes, it did.
Better than the black ones all the time.
Yeah, well, whose idea was the purple one?
I think it was Charlie's they did it last year for Mobile because...
Yeah, but somebody in Vegas prodded him into doing it. It might have been Al, I don't know, but somebody prodded him into doing a different color. Because I know at Mobile he did the red ones this year. I thought the red shirts looked pretty good this year.
Yeah, they did. They look good.
Yeah.
But that purple in Vegas really looked good.
Yes, it did.
He put a different color on it. How many did he have this year? Two gross?
No, yeah, I don't know. That's Charlie's deal, so I'm not sure how many exactly he had, but I don't think so. I think he had maybe, he might have had 12 dozen. He might have had one gross, but I'm not sure.
Uh-huh.
I know when I was sitting there helping him fold them up, it seemed like he had about 3,000.
I thought that's what the women was for.
Man, I get paid good money to babysit him.
I'm glad somebody gets paid.
He's probably listening and trying to crawl through the phone. I told him, I said, man, your wife pays me good money to watch out for you.
You know, the part you don't tell him is she's offered you a reward if you'll leave him out there.
You know, it's funny, I aggravate him. First wrestling trip I ever made, first trip I ever made in my life in the wrestling business was with Charlie Smith. I was 16 years old, maybe. First 15 minutes we're in the car and we're riding and he's talking to me. We're going to Savannah. He's talking to me. And I'm thinking, people don't live like this. This is crazy. He's lying to me. After 15 minutes in the town motel in Savannah, Georgia, I was thinking, maybe people do live like this.
Yep. But how did you get in a car with him?
You know, he just, it was a, Charlie Harbin liked me, hired me to run errands. I was putting up the TV ring. I was putting up the ushering at the auditorium. I was working in Griffin on Saturday nights. And it was the summer. I was out of school, and there were some issues with the ring, and Mr. Newman had built two rings. And for whatever reason, they thought I knew what I was doing, and they sent me down there to look at those two rings Mr. Newman built to see if they were worth buying. And got down there, and he had built an 18-foot ring and a 20-foot ring. And, two of the best rings I'd ever seen. And I told Charlie Harbin, I said, I think you need to buy them. And they wound up leaving that 20-foot ring in that big building in Savannah. And we brought the 18-foot ring back to Atlanta, and that's what we use for house shows in Atlanta. That's what we eventually put it in the auditorium in place of that portable living room they used there for 100 years.
Wasn't that horrible?
That thing was 24 foot square, man. It took forever to go from one side to the other.
That's the way that ring in St. Louis was. Worst ring in the country.
Yeah. No, Madison Square Garden.
I was going to say, the one in Madison Square Garden, from what I've seen on video of it, it looked like it was 24 by 24.
It had to be 24 foot.
Hmm.
Because you could run forever. just trying to cross that sucker. Yeah. I wrestled with Argentina Rock in Madison Square Garden, and he was up on the top rope doing his little, you know, tout de tête up there on the top rope, and he was supposed to come over and wind up drop kicking me, and he kept motioning me to come closer. He had to motion me 3 or 4 different times to come closer to him. He was, it was just forever. It just seemed like, you know.
Bill, how was he to work with?
Rocca?
Yeah.
He was good. It's a little awkward because, you know, he was from South America, and you couldn't very well talk to him back then. You know, you couldn't call your spots the way you wanted to.
You may have heard this story, and I know we've talked about it on here before, but they brought him into Atlanta to work with Sputnik. Sputnik was the top heel here.
Uh-huh.
And the first time they worked was at the Auditorium in Atlanta. I was just a kid. I remember going to the matches. And the place was sold out, packed, people hanging from the rafters. And I forget what they did. They worked some kind of double DQ or some such nonsense. But anyway, they brought back a return, and they booked it at Ponce de Leon Ballpark in Atlanta, which was the minor league baseball park here. And Fuller was booking at the time, and he went to the dressing room, and he told Sputnik to beat him. And then he went to the other dressing room, and he told Rocca to beat Sputnik.
Yeah.
And Charlie refereed, and Charlie said they was both happy because neither one could beat the other.
Yep.
Oh.
Yep.
Who was the worst person you ever worked with, Bill? Other than Jerry Oak.
Moose Cholock.
I wouldn't say that.
You ever worked with Moose Cholock?
Oh yeah. I think the hardest person to work with, because of his size and not his lack of ability, because he had good workmanship, was Ox Baker. Ox Baker, he was a little bit, he was more clumsy than Tex McKenzie. If that was possible. Any of you guys remember Tex?
Oh yeah.
He was, if you was in the ring with Nelson Royal and you was working and he tagged Tex McKenzie in, you better stay down on the floor because he was gonna fall. I'm sorry, but that's the only way I can say it.
Super nice guy, from what I understand, but you're right. He was not very coordinated. He was as tall as he was.
Yeah.
Did you ever work with? Go ahead, Bill.
Go ahead. I was just.
I was going to say, of all your tours of Japan, do you ever work with Mascaris?
Sir?
Did you ever work with Mil Mascaris?
Yes. I worked with him in L.A. I worked with him in L.A., and he was, he was another one that was, but this was back in late 60s, mid 60s. He was very trying to get over in the American style with the Mexican style wrestling. And he was doing all this flying around. And we were not used to that kind of stuff. And it was real hard working with him.
And I've always heard good and bad about it. Jack Briscoe loved to work with him, what I understand. But there was guys that just didn't like working with him because he wouldn't sell, especially in Japan, because he was such a big star over there.
Yeah. Well, Jack Briscoe would hold him down.
Yeah. Same with Dick Fire.
And could. Jack was the kind of guy that didn't take advantage of nobody, you know. But he wasn't going to let you make an ass of him either out there in that ring. He was just an all-around good wrestler, and he had the capabilities of beating anybody. I personally think, you know, in that ring. I would put him in the same class as Luthez, you know.
And everybody in our day knew it, too.
Knew what?
Knew about Jack.
And his wrestling ability?
Yes, sir.
Jack was a darling.
He was a sweetheart.
I mean, he was phenomenal. Anything you wanted to do, he was there for you. And he did his job the same as you did your job. And when he got done, he shook your hand.
There's a drunk guy in Savannah that wouldn't agree with you.
Well, I don't know about that.
We're standing outside the Heel dressing room. And God love him, he died 2 years ago today. Me and Rocket Monroe are standing there. And this drunk walks up and tells Rocket he wants to challenge him. And Rocket looked at him and he said, "Man, why you want to challenge me? I'm a nobody." And he said, "Well, I want to challenge a wrestler, and you're here, and I want to challenge you." Rocket said, "Look, man, you don't want to challenge me. I'm a nobody." And he pointed over across the other side of the dressing room. He said, "You see that guy standing right there? That's a world heavyweight champion. If you beat him, you beat somebody. Walk right over there and challenge him." So the guy said, "I'll do it." And he staggered off. We're standing there watching, and the guy's talking to Jack, and he's talking to Jack. And finally the guy took a step back, and he threw both hands up like somebody had put a gun on him and said, "Stick him up." And when he did, Jack took that left and hit him right between his eyes. And the guy went down like a light, boom, and slid. And Jack went in the dressing room. So I went over there, and I said, "What was that all about?" And he said, "Well, the guy wanted to challenge me." And I said, "Well, the way you challenge me is to step back and put your hands up." So,
promoter in Jacksonville?
Don Curtis.
You ever hear the story about him and the sleeper hold?
No, I had.
I don't think so.
The guys were, you know, he had put out about 15 different people with a sleeper hold all for about a year. And these guys come in there, these big, husky, big guys come in there, and they're lined up the aisle, and they're bragging about what, you know, there's nothing to that sleeper hold. It's all a bunch of phony bullshit, this, that, and the other. Well, here's Curtis. He's getting ready to come in the ring. He decides to go out through the back and come in from the backside, you know, down through the audience. And every step he took, he was knocking them out. He knocked about six of them out, laid them out on the floor. Never missed a step. and by the time he got to the ring. And you talk about weird. Those guys believed it after that.
Don was tough, man.
He's another tough, yeah.
Charlie Smith tells a story about years ago before I-20 was finished, they were coming back from Augusta, and he was riding with, it was Curtis and Joe Scarpa and himself, and he said they stopped at this little all-night truck stop to get something to eat, and he said there was a guy sitting at the bar, and he said the guy was just, oh, them wrestlers are a bunch of phonies and blah, 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 blah. And said Scarpa told the guy, said, man, you need to be quiet now, I'm telling you. And said, finally, Curtis wiped his mouth off, and he stood up, and he went over, and the guy was sitting at the bar. And he said the guy had a hot dog in front of him, and said Curtis picked it up and took that hot dog and just smeared it all in the guy's face. And said the guy reached for a napkin, and Curtis says, don't you wipe it off till I leave, or I'll come back over here. And he went over and sat down, and he said they finished eating, said that guy sat there with that hot dog all over his face till they left.
I've heard that story.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of the devil, we got Mr. Smith calling in. I'm going to get him on the line with us here.
Mr. Smith?
Is this the mayor of Loganville?
This is the mayor of Loganville.
And oh, God.
And Mr. Summers is in a lot of trouble with me, you know it?
I don't think so.
He'll be 3.5 cents. And so I've been trying to get him for it, and he won't pay me.
I guess you're going to have to get the sheriff down there to get him then.
I guess.
Yes, sir. I sure am. Well, y'all had a pretty good program tonight, gentlemen, about what I heard of it.
Thank you very much.
Appreciate that, sir.
Yes, sir. Are you going to send me airfare from... I need to fly from Boston to Atlanta and pick me up at the airport for this Saturday.
Well, I'm waiting for this for Saturday.
Yeah.
It's going to say that somebody's going to run by there and pick you up.
Don't worry about it. I'll take my airfare from Boston to Atlanta.
I said, Bobby will take you everything.
We'll pass the hat.
Yeah.
You probably won't get enough money to get back to South Chattanooga.
They got a deal right now for Las Vegas for $228.
Where am I going to Las Vegas?
Three nights, airfare, and everything for $228.
Where are you staying? Bobby at the Queens down there?
Bobby told me to book it.
Yeah, he told me last night he could get us three free nights and airfare round trip for $228. And stay at the Tropicana, so.
I don't think so.
Oh, yes, it is. I'm looking at it right now.
What station are you on, fella?
It's good through count. It's good through September.
Yeah. Well, it ain't going to do us a damn bit of good.
I know it. That's what I say. If it was, I'd already booked it.
I looked today at Delta for next April, and they're running 500 right now out of Atlanta round trip.
Yeah, I know. I was in that, too.
Yeah.
Well, I feel good, Dan. Southwest from Greenville to Vegas is only running 410.
Southwest is only showing Southwest only shows their reservations out of Atlanta through January, and it's 540 something right now round trip on Southwest.
Yeah. Mm. They won't run it. They won't run it for 10 months. That's all.
Yeah.
Well, Gary Oates has got a car that gets 60 miles to the gallon. He'll come pick up all of you and drive.
We'll all go together.
Yeah, that'd be good. If it was three or four of us going together, it'd be worth the ride out there.
Wouldn't it?
It would.
Oh, yeah. I love
just
it.
Just the stories that would have been told.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
You'd have a book, mate.
We can hone up on all them lies before we got out there. Bill, I've told these guys
this. For sure.
Yeah, I've told these guys this, Bill. But this is one of those true things that when I went to Mobile one year, I came back. One of the ladies in my church came up to me and she told me, and she was being very serious. She says, "I can't believe that you go down there and listen to all them lies for 2 or 3 days." She said, "You ought to put that behind you." And I told her, I said, "You don't understand." I said, "We do tell tales." I said, but we wish they were lies.
Got that right. Yeah, Bobby, I know you. I hear you.
Oh.
Guys, we are just about to run out of time here, so Bill, I appreciate you.
Oh, we can't run out of time. We got 3 more hours to go.
Hey, I thought I had Bill Wayne, not Dick Steinborn.
Hey, Bill Mountain
Dad. I appreciate you joining us, and we'll have to have you back on again whenever your time allows.
Well, I appreciate you guys talking to me.
And Charlie will cut you a check and send it in the mail for your appearance on here. We pay scale.
Whenever I get a check from Charlie, it's always been in the mail.
That's when it's about 7 and 10.
Yep. Every Christmas I get a Christmas card. There's never any money in it. And I'll call out there, and Charlie said, "Well, I ain't sure what happened, but the mailman's got a new pair of shoes, so I don't know."
All right, good night, everyone. Okay. Enjoy talking to everybody.
Good night, Charlie.
Bye-bye.
Good night, Charlie. Good night, Bobby.
Good night, Bill.
Good night, Jerry.
Good night, William.
Tell your brother I said hello, too.
I'll do that.
All righty. Mike,
all right, guys.
Thanks for having me on.
You're quite welcome, Bill. Thank you for doing the show. And Bobby and Jerry, we'll get together next Thursday, and we'll see what kind of trouble we can get in.
Sound like a winner. Good night, guys.
Good night, guys.
Good night, guys. Hey, Mike.
We thank you for listening to this broadcast, a production brought to you by GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com and the GWH Radio Network. Stay tuned to GWH for nostalgia, upcoming events, and more. As always, GWHHistory.com. Thank you for your continued support.